are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Is Apocalypse a good man? Is he a kind man? Oh, I'm sorry. This is X-Men Apocalypse, not X-Men Apocalypse Now. My mistake.
That would have been awesome. probably better than this.
Yeah.
Although about as coherent.
You know, as many great things as there are about Apocalypse Now, coherence is not one of the things that's regularly accused.
Nope.
So you think 20 years from now, this will be like that madcap like Apocalypse Now film where they're like, what you don't understand is when they were making this film, they were all tripping balls. They were like, they filmed the whole thing in the Philippines. They just thought they were going to die. At one point, Michael Fassbender just wandered into the jungle and we didn't see him for 3 days.
Now I just want to watch Tropic Thunder again.
Yeah, it does kind of sound like that.
Oscar Isaac isn't blueface in this. So.
That's just true.
Yeah.
Survive. Hey,
that's offensive to the Na'vi.
Oh,
and the Smurfs.
Yeah.
And the Smurfs.
I apologize.
Hey, I'm offended by the Smurfs. So.
I'm offended by the reference to the Na'vi, and I said it.
Well, yep. You're saying offended is problematic, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You saying problematic is problematic.
Well, shit.
I think we can all get around that one, though. Anyway, yes.
This is how interesting this movie is.
I'm Chris.
Richard.
Elliot.
Herman.
This is the third chapter in the prequel saga of X-Men films.
No. This is the revamped continuity.
Yeah, but it's the third. It's the third of the new cycle.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's a new continuity because the old continuity doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, as we saw from Days of Future Past. Spoiler if you didn't watch it. But why are you even listening to this review if you didn't watch the last one? Which basically said, you know what we should do? We should make a whole movie about telling Brett Ratner to go fuck himself.
Even though I think X-Men 3 is horrible. But even though Brett Ratner. That wasn't his fucking fault. Like, somebody decided to get cute and go work on Superman Returns and have this little Jesus film.
I don't agree with that assessment, but okay.
We discussed this before, and you were wrong then as well.
No.
It was a director to hire job. You know, and I would also blame Simon Kinberg to a certain extent.
Yeah, but regardless, I think it's widely acknowledged that X3 pretty much killed the previously existing Patrick Stewart led X-Men universe as it was, because everyone's like, I don't want to see what happens after that.
You just fucked
it up in so many ways. Days of Future Past did the smart thing of saying, okay, even though we're never going to explain exactly how Patrick Stewart is still here, this is that extension of that universe, and everything went horribly wrong, and now we're saying, okay, we changed time, so now none of that existed. So now, with X-Men Apocalypse, going back to, you know, the time of the younger people, we've got, instead of Patrick Stewart, you've got James McAvoy as Charles Xavier.
With a members-only jacket through every scene.
Who looks just as young as he did in 1963 for some reason.
It's funny.
It's those Scottish jeans.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Look at him. He's Richard, he's 75.
I'm aging backwards.
The beard.
My wife recently saw some photos of me from when I was like 25, and she went, you look a little younger now. What the hell? I'm like, I just suck the life force out of people.
So you're a movie critic.
Hey!
Yeah, that's what we do.
Aww.
But in this one, having basically, you know, in many ways, like if the last film had been the last X-Men film in this continuity, everyone would have been like, yeah, that was a great ending.
Perfect ending.
You put this beautiful cap on being able to solve the issues with the previous X-Men films, tie everything together, and leave with this note of sort of optimism for the future of that particular world. If they at that point had said, okay, Marvel, it's yours, you can do whatever you want with it, and they just recast with new people, we'd all be like, that's fine, because they finished a great run on that version of the X-Men.
Yeah, it's a run.
And I think that's one of the problems with X-Men Apocalypse ultimately is that it almost is like a, well, what do we do now?
It's an amazing Spider-Man 2.
Let's adapt a really kind of mediocre 90s X-Men storyline.
Yeah, which is about the character Apocalypse or En-Saba-Nur.
Or Apocalypse combined with the Shadow King.
Yes.
Yes, as you say.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we will be going in some deep comic X-Men nerddom.
Deep cuts,
this
baby.
One.
Here we go.
Yeah, well, I mean...
First person to mention Strife, take a drink.
Yeah, well, don't say... How do you... That's actually something... If you're going to have an Apocalypse movie, how do you really have an Apocalypse movie and have the proper scale without at least mentioning Cable? Like, that's his entire arc, and then, like, that's how you could tie Deadpool in.
Well, that's because, like, honestly, they've already said... They've already established certain characters are going to happen much later in the timeline.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, well, now they can't be at this earlier timeline. Because okay. Now we're... These movies, each movie separated by 10 years of this new, like, three series that they've been doing. This is Bryan Singer, once again, who directed the last one, but not the first one, First Class.
Wasn't that Brian K. Vaughn?
Not Brian K. Vaughn.
Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah. They're all the Vaughns are the same, man.
No, I just respect both of their work, so my mind just interchanges them.
I would love to see a Brian K. Vaughn
God.
Written X-Men script.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. He also show ran Under the Dome.
Wow. I've not seen that.
It's not so great.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so this one taking the old Apocalypse comics, and once again, in a way that they had no choice but to, in terms of what characters were involved, go real different from the comic books. But Apocalypse is Oscar Isaac, who is the first mutant, and we see, starting off in Egyptian times, he's an older, more decrepit-looking Apocalypse, taking his spirit and putting it inside the younger body of Oscar Isaac, because apparently that's what this guy does. They find like other people and who are, I guess, insinuated that maybe they were mutants too, and added new powers to him by him taking over their bodies later.
So he was
later.
The first mutant, but not by very much,
yes.
And this also leads to, because he can absorb their powers, his incredibly nebulous power set, which is a problem in the comics, and is massively amplified here.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, that you talk about that nebulous power set, I really get the sense in this movie they tried to make Apocalypse a better character, but they just totally... It's like swing and a miss.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Let me finish the plot so we can just get quick, and then we can retrospect. And I will say, almost any movie that starts off with a sequence in ancient Egypt is by definition not that great.
Yeah.
So this is, as I think we said earlier, the plot of The Mummy pretty much started off.
It is exactly the opening sequence of The Mummy, to the point where I was expecting Apocalypse to reach up from his quasi-deathbed and shout, Axanamoon! It really is exactly the same.
Yeah, he's a tyrant, and the people in Egypt don't like it either, so they've got a whole plot going, and they bury him in the whole pyramid right when he's doing this transfer in new body. Flash to modern day, and Moira McTaggart, played by Rose Byrne, who we didn't really see at all in Days of Future Past.
Even she wasn't in it at all.
One of the primary characters in the first one, First Class, and she's, out there. She got some sort of note saying, hey, investigate some shit these Egyptian dudes are doing in Egypt. Like, that's something shaky. And she goes down and finds these guys are trying to resurrect Apocalypse. And
then, because she's kind of bozo-ish, which is a problem that afflicts many characters in this, she actually does it in... She raises Apocalypse inadvertently.
Yeah.
Like, good work. You actually just destroyed the world.
Now, I will say, there's she could have known that was going to...
There's like... Then she just wanders off.
No, but
she's... And nothing... Not paying any attention. But that happens a lot in this film.
Yeah, that's... Like Richard said, that's emblematic of a larger problem.
No, it is.
That... Things just happen to get to the next point. They don't happen because they make any organic sense.
Yeah, mainly, though, when it comes to Apocalypse, which, as we'll see, is anything directly related to his character and what that plot is the biggest problems with this film. Because, ultimately, what happens for the next 40 minutes or so of this film is what Bryan Singer is actually interested in telling us about, which is introducing the new X-Men, which is... the new Scott Summers, played by Ty Sheridan, who, whether we want it or not, is going to be a big star. Fortunately, unlike the last guy they did this with, Shia LaBeouf, Ty Sheridan actually has a lot of acting talent.
What else has he been in?
Oh, they've been pumping him in to a lot of stuff lately. Oh, look, there's Ty Sheridan. He's in that, and he's in that, too.
So is Oscar Isaac, who is the flavor du jour, and I'm not quite sure why.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they did something like cast Ty Sheridan as young Han Solo.
They already cast the person from that Coen Brothers movie that was horrible last year.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it wasn't done deal.
Oh, I thought it was.
I don't know. Maybe it is.
I thought he was been cast.
Yeah. Anyway, he's Scott Summers, Cyclops. We see him starting off. We see him literally his powers set beginning, and boy, is his laser eye dealy a lot more freaky and destructive than we've ever seen it before.
Which they get wrong just X-Men nerd. X-Men nerd point.
Oh boy.
Cyclops
feels like this should be the audio version of a footnote.
They don't generate heat.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's like if you read any X-Men comic books, that's one of the things they cover a lot. They're not heat beams, so when he burns that tree down, it's like, no, it just like really stuck at me because like Cyclops has always been my favorite character.
But it looks really cool when he does it.
Yeah, I'm not willing to go with you on that.
You know,
I love you, Elliot.
No, they are pressure beams.
I am nitpicking. Okay, that's a nitpick.
It's true, they are pressure beams. But anyway, regardless of the science of those beams, they look really cool here, and they're really destructive. And he gets brought to Xavier's school, which now, unlike in the last movie, is fully functioning. It's like, hey, there's students all over the fucking place, including a young Jean Grey, aka Marvel Girl, played by Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones, who right off the bat has a sort of meat snark with Scott that very quickly the movie turns around into like, oh, that was awkward, but now we're going to be friends because of it.
She just didn't like him because, you know, he had his eyes covered. She thought he was blind. It's like, get out of my way. What are you, blind or something?
People.
I think she's just still traumatized from the character she plays on Game of Thrones. She thinks everything's going to go bad for her.
I can understand that.
Yeah, I mean, as well as we're seeing like the return of a lot of the old characters, Michael Fassbender as Magneto, Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique, looking not terribly pleased to be here. No. Nicholas Holt as Hank McCoy / Beast.
Teen Wolf. They have still not improved that makeup. They have had three films to get this right, and they still can't do it.
Give X-Men Last Stand this. Kelsey Grammer's Beast looked a lot better.
Yeah. Cody Smith McPhee is introduced as Kurt Wagner / Nightcrawler. Mm-hmm. A very much younger, more uncertain version than we saw before, of course, because he literally is used to people chasing him with pitchforks and torches. Yeah?
Because the X2 version is pretty angsty.
He is pretty angsty. This one is just kind of a little timid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but looks pretty cool.
Before his spirits are completely crushed.
And so you're like, okay, so you're introducing all these characters that are sort of that point in the X-Men comics when they went from the Iceman looked like Frosty the Snowman to, like, introducing these, all, like, Wolverine, all these other characters. Like, where are all those other characters that came in? Well, this is another point where the film gets awkward to me, is where they become other mutants that Apocalypse hunts down and makes his agents of destruction, his avenging...
Four horsemen
of the Apocalypse, including Aurora Monroe, Storm, played by Alexandra Shipp, who they basically just have look aghast at stuff all the time and doesn't really have any dialogue.
Nope. She didn't have much to do at all.
Yeah.
Moment where you're like, oh yeah, well you clearly set that. There's a lot of heavy foreshadowing of stuff that's going to happen later. This is nuts. It's poorly plotted and not subtly plotted.
Yeah,
I think we could say that.
It's all just, it's way overcomplicated for something that, like, at its heart wants to be sort of a sweet X-Men high school film, and in practice is like a big jumbled plot mess with Apocalypse, who's a completely ineffective character.
But you hit on the exact problem with the movie, is it should have really picked one. Like, you can either be this big action adventure, like spanning the globe, and that's cool, or you can be this quieter high school mutant story that Bryan Singer obviously wants to tell. That's where his heart is, and that's what he's good at.
Yeah,
I honestly just do not think he has the chops to make a modern superhero movie.
I mean, he has always loved big casts. That much is clear. I mean, he broke into the scene with The Usual Suspects, which was all about ensemble casts. And I think in the past, he's proven he can handle ensemble casts.
No, it's not ensemble cast.
This one is where it's kind of... Even though, Civil War just proved to us all, you can make a great superhero movie with a huge cast. Totally. But it takes some serious skill, especially in the writing room.
It's like, I think he's at a B level. He's like maybe a B minus. He's not at that A plus. Like, I walked out of that movie feeling like I watched a movie from 2004.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like a 2004 movie, not a 2016 movie. Because, like, there are lessons that superhero movies have learned over the past 15 years that I feel like he hasn't learned any of them. He's making some of the same mistakes that were made back in 2004 and 2000.
Maybe not as drastic mistakes, but like the whole...
Like the small mistakes.
Like, I mean, the biggest problem here is the same one Thor the Dark World had, is that the villain is just really uninteresting to look at, and its behavior isn't really thoroughly understandable during it.
Wants to destroy the world, Chris. Understand.
Well, it wants to destroy the world to remake it for the strong. Wait, for mutants? No, for the strong. Can you clarify that? No.
Apocalypse. I just try to destroy the world. let's just go with it.
I mean, even in the comic books, Apocalypse is kind of a background villain, where he's got all these other villains standing in front of him.
The point of Apocalypse is to change characters. He is a he is something... He's basically a big blue walking MacGuffin.
Yeah.
He is there to put characters through the ringer, to have an effect on them, and then the plot is about, well, what happens to them afterwards.
Yeah.
So in the original comic, when he turns up and gives, you know, Warren Worthington, Angel, metal wings after he's had his wings torn off, you know, that's a huge character beat, and it defines where the character is for decades
still
afterwards.
Today.
And yet, yep. But Apocalypse isn't particularly interesting, and, you know, I blame the script by
Kinberg,
which is gives him nothing to do. I blame Isaacs, who does not work out. You need to do something with this character. You need to give him something that makes him engaging. I blame the way he's shot.
Like, shot
everybody
horribly.
Everybody is to blame for the fact that he is not interested. But if you want to, the one thing it does do right is that, like in the comics, you have lots of interesting character moments. So I think this is the thing that Singer still does well. I think he's a good director of actors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great moments in here where you go, this was really interesting. This is like a little vignette. In fact,
absolutely.
If you ever read the... when they reprinted a lot of the early... early X-Men stuff, after they moved to the new team.
Yeah.
When they did a reprint, they actually had these little backup stories that they reprinted as
those like five
vignettes.
Yeah.
And these were really nice little character stories. This feels like a lot of those stuck together.
It's the Saturday Night Live
like miniature
of superhero
anthologies
movies.
Where there's some beautiful moments. I mean, some of the interactions between Scott and Jean are really great. Magneto hiding out in Poland plot I thought was great because it gives Fassbender the opportunity to do some of the best scenes he's done with the character.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And
yeah.
But this is never... It's never even the sum of its parts.
Yep.
And I think if you can... At this point, I don't expect Bryan Singer to tell me a coherent story. So I think I was actually quite forgiving about this in some ways. Because I just was like, well, look, it's going to get to the end. And it's going to be where a superhero movie like this wants to go. And not do it particularly artfully. But the fun... I'll have fun along the way. But it's like driving and staring out the side windows rather than staring forward.
You know, I think part of the biggest key thing for me, why Apocalypse never works, and not just that he's uninteresting, but that when they choose to do something in the comic books is a huge, oh my God moment you brought up before, where they take Warren Worthington, Angel, he strips him of his wings and makes them into Archangel, a totally different looking character, and you're like, wow, that's actually a big dramatic moment in the comics. Here... It's with a brand new character we haven't even been introduced to before.
Yeah.
So why should we? So why? Who already is kind of an asshole? Clearly,
he's a pit fighter in this.
Yeah, he's a pit fighter, which also is weird.
And here's the thing: I know it's a different timeline, but
so there's no emotional
later.
Yeah. There's no emotional impact to that doing that to this character here at all. And then he's controlling Psylocke, who he doesn't do anything to.
Yeah, Olivia Munn shows up two lines in the film.
Yeah, she is in this film for the moments that are in the trailer for her to be like looking badass and sexy. And that's about it, as near as I can tell.
It wasn't worth her time.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, it's just, Psylocke is an interesting character in the comic books.
Yeah.
She here is barely a character at all.
She was one of the best parts. Psylocke was one of the best parts of all of 90s X-Men. Like, there are just entire runs where she's a key part of that story. And, like, as much shit as Olivia Munn gets on the internet from people just for, honestly, just being Olivia Munn, like, this wasn't worth her time because she's going to be getting shit off of this for a long time. And she had two lines.
Now, I mean, I think they could certainly do something interesting with the character. And they're trying to set her up as, like, okay, like... She's one of those people that you can never tell which way her allegiances are necessarily going to go at first, which is definitely true of Psylocke. She is she's one of the ones who, if there's a Black Ops mission, she's like, yeah, I'll totally fucking do that.
Well, she's been with the Brotherhood, the X-Men, X-Force.
Yeah.
Well, they did condense her backstory down because her backstory is really fucked up. So
it actually ended up being so fucked up that they couldn't actually work out who, even the writers could not work out who she was at one point.
Yep.
Was
she Quanon or was she?
They forget. And there's actually real continuity issues with her in the comics.
But
I mean, I gotta say, I still do miss actual Betsy Braddock.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that's just this was almost the least interesting version of her that I think I'd have seen anybody do. This Psylocke did nothing for me at all.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like just a waste of a character. But the thing, you know, you mentioned time. that's the thing I really laugh at, is they are sticking their entire, like, thesis of how they're making these movies based on, you know, this one's in the 60s, this one's in the 70s, this one's in the 80s, next one's in the 90s. But the X-Men play with time like a jump rope.
Yeah.
Like, we really don't need to be bound to time, because it's the X-Men.
I kind of feel like they made almost a mistake doing this is us watching this origin of Apocalypse dealing with this X-Men,
yeah,
and didn't just do Days of Future Past again in some ways. Like, yeah, no, the Age of Apocalypse has happened.
Exactly.
And this is an alternate timeline, and it's about Magneto figuring out, wait, things weren't supposed to be this way, and finding out that, like, yeah, in the real timeline, he totally fucked over Charles Xavier and killed him, because in his memory, he remembers him as, like, the guy who saved his life and this great hero,
yeah,
who's honoring his memory. You're like, no, you're a villain in the real timeline, dude. I was like, no, that would have been actually a really interesting version of this story, but as it is, you're right, like a 90s to early 2000s superhero movie with a generic villain that never really feels threatening, that replaces his much more interesting horseman here with, you know, Marvel characters that we know aren't going to stay horsemen.
Yeah.
You know? Because they're major Marvel characters. Like, wait, what are you doing?
The other real problem with this is there's a few moments which are supposed to be major emotional beats, including one very significant death that I, you know, 10 minutes later, I forgot it happened.
Yeah, me too.
Which
was
a real shame.
I don't even know what you're referring to.
I don't even know what you're referring to.
Yeah, exactly.
It took me a minute. It wasn't until I looked at the cast list. I was like, oh, that's right. They died in this.
Oh, my God. Like, I forgot.
Yeah. And it's actually a major character, not just in the X-Men, but for this series. And I was like, wow, because it's so like, oh, yeah, that happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we had to, like, we're like,
I was like, what are you talking about? Who died? I'm like, oh, and then
he died. It really just kind of happens.
Well, you don't even see it. You don't even see someone who dies in the film.
Yeah.
You're
worse than Elliot.
Yeah. I didn't say it. It's really horribly handled. And I think that's, like I said, this is, if that moment happens, and when you're in that moment, you go, that's kind of cool. But it also has the problem of happening just after one of the best sequences in the film.
And
so you have a character, you have this point where you're like, oh, this was really great, this was really phenomenal. And then you've got this emotional beat, and you're like, do you know how to tell a story?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no, you do not.
It's like a sadness sandwich, but the meat of the happiness is so good that you're just like, oh, fuck, I don't care that that guy died. I don't give a shit. That Quicksilver scene was fucking awesome.
See, yes.
What drives me crazy here, and this is, you know, obviously you guys have probably already read some reviews out there that variate between, like, look, I love these characters, and there's some awesome stuff in here, but this is not one of their best movies, to, what the fuck, this is as bad as Batman versus Superman.
Oh, no, and no, it's not. There's no Martha scene, guys. Don't worry about it.
How do you know that name?
But it is a mess, and it's a mess that's fortunate enough to be, like, back and forth between, what's the point of this? This is dull, too. Wow, that was awesome! Over and over and over again through the whole movie.
Yep.
It's just a collection of cool moments that have nothing to really tie them together very well or emotionally at all. I mean, the biggest emotional resonance we get is through Michael Fassbender himself, who they really do. It's a perfect next stage for his character of what we've seen him go through so far. And I teared up a little with some of the stuff he had to deal with.
Well,
I was like, that's messed up, dude.
But even then,
you're like, once again, they're like, okay, so now we're going to make Magneto the bad guy again for a little while. And you're like going, this is just that you got to quit that cycle in the same movie of doing that. You know, he's bad, he's good, he's bad, he's good.
And then, like, the appearance of Wanda was really cool. Like, I'm sorry, that's Scarlet Witch in that movie.
What are you talking about?
His daughter is obviously Wanda.
No, it's not.
In Days of Future Past, you see Quicksilver with his little sister.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is a completely new character.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's not
Polaris either?
No, it's not Polaris. Polaris controls metal as well.
Yeah.
And also is variably his daughter and not.
Yeah, they're really not sure.
Depending on which... in some timelines, she is.
Even in cool continuity, they just keep forgetting.
I don't understand if Star Trek has this team of devoted nerds who make sure they don't fuck up anything, and, like, even in the novels, and go, no, that didn't happen. There's literally people who are paid who are just that big nerds. Their whole job is to be Star Trek nerds and go, no, that didn't happen because in episode number 36, whatever.
Yeah.
Why can't the X-Men have that people?
Because here's the thing, it's not a flaw, it's a product feature.
Yeah.
Like, the X-Men is the biggest soap opera that's been run for 40 years, and it's a feature of the product because that means every 5 years you can just refresh the brand.
Yeah.
And, like, we went from a really cool X-Men Utopia run to an okay Brian Michael Bendis run on all new X-Men, but like you get a different.
So you're recommending for readers who are looking to read X-Men Utopia?
X-Men Utopia.
I haven't read that run.
It's so good, but like really good. The thing that's good about X-Men and the thing that's going to really lend itself to better movies in the future is it's
Bryan Singer-less movies in the future.
It's built in for reboots. Like that's the fundamental nature of X-Men is it changes its spots every 5 years.
Yeah, I think like at this point, if the deal, which I once again say for the 30th time, sorry for people who are sick of hearing it, I strongly suspect deals are already being struck to move the X-Men to the Marvel universe by various things that are happening.
Well, they're moving
very little subtle things that I'm like they're slowly moving the pieces into place to actually go very close to the release of the film where it happens. Okay, we're going to actually introduce the X-Men so that they can go.
Well, they canceled Inhumans. That's enough for me.
That was a big part of it. Yeah.
It's like they're not going to be mutants. They've never been mutants, and humans have always been sort of lame.
We haven't even talked about Evan Peters, who appears again in here as Quicksilver.
Yeah.
Who, if you remember Days of Future Past, had the scene-stealingest scene in the history of superhero movies, where it was like, okay, the rest of this movie is good, but this scene is the one we're going to be talking about for 6 months afterwards.
Yeah.
Sure enough, in this movie, it's like, we need to outdo that scene with him, make it like the really funny part that everyone's like, man, I loved that bit. And sure enough, they fucking nail that.
It's great. See, at this point, you want a Quicksilver movie.
Yeah, I just want
to think that's the thing. You watch this, and I think every up-and-coming director in the studio system is currently sat there going, well, clearly Bryan Singer has set this up as the place where they can springboard off a lot of sequels.
Yeah.
I think we finally get the Magneto movie.
Yeah.
I think that's, this is the point where you just go, Fassbender just needs the Magneto movie in a
hard
way that,
R.
Yeah. And you can carry that really well. You know, Quicksilver, people clearly are going to want a Quicksilver movie. The core continuity is, you know, obviously going to be Scott and Jean because they've finally gone, we hung the first three off Wolverine, now it's going to be Scott and Jean, and people are probably going to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the franchise goes from here.
And it's setting up some of those pieces
in
a good way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a lot of the things this is setting up to happen next for the characters, I'm all for. Like you said, Scott and Jean being set up as those big characters there, totally for that. That's where it has to go, especially as it seems clear they want to go, okay, now we're kind of, in our own way, getting back to what the comics were doing in the early days. You know, okay, great. Let's see that happen. Nightcrawler is a primary character now in every movie as a major character. Yes, please.
But you say in primary, just to rip off that, like, the thing that was most disappointing is I want some primary colors in my X-Men. Like, everything's so muted, and it's just, that's not what X-Men are. Like, they're bright, they're loud, and I feel like Marvel has shown you can do comic book costumes and make them look good.
X-Men started out where it's like, what, do you want yellow spandex?
Yes, I would like that. I want Wolverine to have his real mask.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they even First Class was kind of a sorry when they actually did give them jumpsuits that were, like, primary color yellow.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, there they are.
And it looks good.
But then all the fans started bitching online saying, oh, no, it just looks goofy. We don't want this. Yeah. So it's like, but what do you guys want?
You're ultimately not going to please everybody.
That's true.
And I think that's important to remember.
No, that's true.
You know, when you're talking about, like, how close is this or isn't to the comic.
Yeah.
And I think, like, as we said, the Apocalypse run is not, you know, it's got great moments throughout it, but it's not one of the greatest, like, characters or story runs in the history of the X-Men.
No, I mean,
There is one thing while we're talking about costumes. Dear audience, when you go and see this, because statistically speaking, with the amount of money this is going to make, you'll probably go and see this. Just as an indicator of how poorly thought through a lot of this is, when the flight suits turn up, ask yourselves, why are they all the right sizes?
Holy shit. How
are they all fitted so perfectly? Just ask yourself that. And that it is just one of the logical problems.
No, you're right. It's 1980. Why are their flight suits specifically cut for women?
Because
at a government organization.
Imagine
where we see no women in the building.
We imagine that Reed Richards does exist in this universe. And he has built unstable molecule outfits. They don't even have to say it. For me, I was fine. I can get past stuff like that and go like, yeah, it's unstable molecules. Don't worry about it. I mean, it's the X-Men.
No.
That's the thing that suspend your disbelief for.
The thing was that, like, that's a moment where you just go, You're not even trying to make sense at this point.
Yeah.
You really, and like, it's one of those little moments that adds up to the basic problem of this, which is they didn't think enough through primarily the script.
Well, keep going with your final thoughts.
It's Singer at his most Singerish, which is getting great moments and bad hours, which is highly it's what he does these days. I can't even get mad at him for being that guy anymore, because that's what he does.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I think this film does do is it doesn't make you want to go and see X3 again, but it does make you go, I kind of feel sorry for Ratner. He's got a bum rap. It's pretty well executed at most levels, but I don't know. In a year when we've had the nadir of big budget superhero movies in Batman vs Superman, and something that's going to be up there is held up as one of the best examples of the genre in Civil War.
Yeah, the apex.
This is there. It's all the problems of the genre if you're not working at the level of the Russos with Kevin Feige over your shoulder going, we need to really make this something that really pushes the medium and the genre. This is what you get. It's yet again the Fox end of the superhero universe not learning what it is that they need to do. It's better than Fantastic Four.
Well, everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's
not that bad.
That's damning with
your brain. It's a sign, their biggest success
It's not like the Holocaust.
but their biggest success has been the film where they didn't care.
Yeah.
And that was Deadpool.
Yeah.
And this is, this is 6 underrated Scott Lobdell runs out of 10.
Elliot?
I this is one of the only times I've ever said this, but Richard, I completely agree with everything you just said. it's
and now we're married.
Yeah, it's
you
just,
are legally.
Yeah.
I declared this house its own kingdom. So.
This movie is just extremely disappointing because it has the kernels of a good movie there. You can see them. It's this movie is fool's gold. Like you look at it and you're like, this should be good. Like, I can see where you're going. And then it just never does anything with all that potential.
So you mean, that's pie, right?
Yeah.
Sorry. It's a fool's gold joke. It's pie, right? Fool's gold is pie, right?
Sorry,
didn't know. He's a lawyer. He doesn't know geology.
Oh, okay. Pie, I get it.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
That was deserving of a big groan, and thank you, Richard.
Yeah,
I want Fox to either give the movie back to Marvel or to get somebody who is going to be able to work on the same level. It's obvious that Bryan Singer cares. He gets an A for effort, but he just does not have it to make a modern superhero movie. He can make good character beats, he can make good moments, and that's great. But I expect more from the X-Men now. I expect the X-Men to be on the same level as the Avengers, because all through the 90s, the X-Men were outpacing the Avengers easily. And so to tell me that, it's just the X-Men is not going to... No, the X-Men was what I grew up on. Like, the kids these days are growing up on the Avengers. Like, that's what's their thing now.
Yeah.
X-Men can be just as good, if not better, than the Avengers if you do it right. And they really need to get somebody who can do this. And I don't know how they do that, but all that's to say, a very long-winded way of saying, it's not bad, but it's not good. It's exactly a 5 Psylocke, underused Olivia Munns out of 10.
Herman?
Yeah, it's a pretty disappointing film, especially after Days of Future Past, which is actually probably one of my favorite superhero films. What everyone said, it's pretty much true. Probably the big disappointments for me were Jennifer Lawrence, who obviously does not want to be a part of this franchise anymore. Yeah. And she makes it pretty clear, because she is not the classic blue mystique that we've seen in the previous films. It was obvious that it's like, okay, for the next 4 to 5 days, like in her contract, she said, you're going to have me in the makeup or full body suit or whatever it is now, and that'll be it.
You better schedule my shots.
Yeah, and they even make it a point to say, it's like, I'm not usually the blue mystique anymore. It's like they even make that like a part of the dialogue. It's like, it's just so awkward, it doesn't really work. The other thing I want to bring up is that some of the, I think you talked about this before, Elliot, like some of the CGI effects and the wire work in the film was also really sloppy.
Yeah.
Particularly the stuff with Beast, like the way he moves doesn't really work. And also with Wolverine, who, spoiler, is in the movie.
Is in the trailer.
Yeah.
In the trailer. That's one of the many things that are spoiled in the trailers. Do not watch the trailers too closely, because you will be very angry by the time you get through the film.
Absolutely. And, you know, after seeing Deadpool, it's like, at this point, I just want to see Wolverine gut people and blood everywhere. And clearly they're not going with it. Although, in the next the upcoming Wolverine film, they're obviously going to do that, which is like, finally.
Old Man Logan.
Whatever version of that's going to be. For people who are just in Apocalypse, I encourage people to check out Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force, which to me is probably the best representation of Apocalypse yet. And the other thing is, this movie, to me, has a lot of the same problems I thought Avengers Age of Ultron had, where it's so busy setting up all these different other films, where any of the films clearly hints at the next story that they're going to do, and obviously they're starting to lay the groundwork for eventually what's going to be X-Force. So, as it stands, it's a pretty disappointing film. For now, I'd probably just give it 6 out of 10 blue boobs.
You know, thank you. I'll be thinking about that for the rest of my life.
What, Herman's blue boobs?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a weird TV show.
That's an image.
You know, this is both simultaneously...
Sorry, you did a Herman's Head reference.
Why in all the reviews everyone brings up Herman's
Head? That was a time bomb, baby.
Jesus Christ. This is both simultaneously a movie made entirely and only for hardcore X-Men geek-out fans, and not at all for them. But it's definitely not made for casual movie superhero fans who are going to come in going, I don't even understand what's going on in a lot of this thing. You can't watch this film without having watched the first two to have any clue what's happening, which is fine. I'm okay with that. But then it goes so far off continuity and makes bad decisions for said continuity compared to the comic books that are going to piss off fans. It's very confusing who they were trying to please ultimately with this film. And that's the biggest flaw right here. And I'm certainly going to be the last person to like come down on anybody for being able to successfully make an X-Men movie that was, it's all right. Because that's pretty good. X-Men movies are really hard to make.
Sure.
Like, it's a lot of characters and a lot of continuity and a lot of people to please. And ultimately, this is not a terrible film.
No.
It's nowhere near as bad as X3 or X-Men Origins Wolverine. It's not, shouldn't even be compared to either one of those films as to how bad it is, and certainly not to Fantastic Four.
Ugh.
Which is like barely worth discussing.
That's worse than Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, yeah.
I still want to see the original director's version with, you know, the other completely different film that they shot.
Go watch Chronicle.
But
that's the original version.
Yeah. But this being a film where, like, it's really about bringing in my X-Men that I grew up with those new X-Men that were coming in replacing the first run, which was like, who was that? What was the Living Island they defeated?
Krakoa.
And then they introduced the new X-Men to bring in, and it brings in Storm and Nightcrawler and all these characters. Those are, you know, the love story between Jean and Scott. That's my story. And we never really saw that as told from the beginning before. I mean, the original X-Men films, they were all old.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, my back! Oh, I'm sorry, Jean. Can we try to pick up having sex again tomorrow? Like, that's just like, that's the point in the comics that everyone had already lost interest. I'm like, I want to see young, where it's tentative steps towards first love, and two nerds trying to get it on, and their powers keep getting in the way. Yeah, that's what I want to see. And there's a lot of that type of stuff in here. There's a lot of that goofiness. There's a lot of joy to be found in this film and its comic moments, especially, like I said, once again, with Quicksilver, who this movie just could have used that much more of. And there's a lot of good things to say about some of the drama with Michael Fassbender. The stuff he does here is the best dramatic runs he's done in all three of these films. But my God, like we said, something to tie it all together that's better than Apocalypse, which is almost the less said about the better, but he's in the fucking title, so you can't. I look at this as a film, hey, if you were having a movie night 10 years from now where you're like, we're going to watch all six X-Men films of, like, since First Class together, it's not one you'd all sit and dread. You'd just be like, yeah, it's not one of the better ones, but it's still got a lot of fun stuff in it. I enjoy rewatching it. Hopefully the next one is that much better. Well, maybe we'll get into a Star Trek situation with every other movie. Who knows?
Well, it's set in the 90s, Chris, so of course it's going to be better. It's going to be based off the 90s cartoon.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- just fucking with you. I have the whole run on DVD.
Let him finish.
No, I mean, we're going to go out on that song. So So did you get
I told you it's my kingdom.
Well, but did you get your Marvel check?
Oh, yeah, I got my check.
Shit, I didn't get mine.
Yeah, I was sent to the wrong address.
This is bullshit.
Oh, well, anyway, I give this 7 out of 10 adorable dogs moving at light speed. Because, yes. Is that the moment that I take away from this film when you go, the thing I'm going to remember best about this movie is a little pug dog having G-force on its face.
And then eating pizza when it was done.
Yeah, I was like, that's the moment I took away from this film the most.